Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers round him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him, and then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand. Then they knelt in front of him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews," they said. They spat on him, took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. There they offered Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall, but after tasting it, he refused to drink it. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots. And sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from the cross if you are the Son of God."
When I read through this passage, I imagined it all playing out in my head, and you've got all the characters doing their different things. So you've got Jesus at the center, it's about him. Then you've got the soldiers, and they're kind of the big action players in this story. They're the ones that whip him, they're the ones that dress him, they're the ones that put a crown of thorn on his head, they're the ones that crucify him, they're the ones that watch over him as he's on the cross. Then you've got some smaller characters. You've got Simon, who carries Jesus' cross. Then you've got the two criminals who are crucified next to Jesus. And you've got these passers-by that hurl insults at Jesus. And they've actually got their only speaking part. Anyway, there's a lot going on. There's different stories, there's different mini stories. And I mean, you can only imagine what's going on in Simon's head as he's forced to carry Jesus' cross. But in amongst everything that's happening, there's Jesus. He's at the center. It's all about him. So my question for you is Jesus playing a central role in your story, your life? And I think from this passage, there's three things that we can learn about how to keep Jesus at the center of our life. And the first one is focus. In high school, I did a class called Ancient History. And for one of my projects, I researched Roman soldiers. And so I learned all about how they're disciplined, how precise they are, they're fierce, they're scary, all that. But what I also learned is that they enlisted at a very young age, and they had a 25-year service time. If they made out alive, they would then get some land and kind of like a pension, nowadays pension. Anyway, I remember watching a video about a soldier, and I don't know if it was a real soldier, but it was based on real facts. And he was so determined to make it through these 25 years alive. He was so focused on doing his job because he didn't want to die, because he wanted that land. So he just drilled in and he did his job. And I think for us as Christians, we need to be focused, like really focused, on Jesus, on the truth, on his promises. Our world today is crazy, but we know his promise in Romans 8:28 that God works all things for the good of those who love him. And so when we focus on things that aren't God, when we focus on things that aren't his truth, and we start focusing on fear, our story takes a different direction. It goes down a different path. So we need to stay focused on Jesus. We need to keep him at the center of our life. And it's not easy to follow him, but that story with him at the center has purpose and it has focus. The next thing we can learn is backbone. So we can carry the cross, and the cross is our backbone. earlier in Matthew in chapter 16, Jesus is telling his disciples that whoever wishes to follow him must deny himself and take up his cross. And so denying ourselves, I mean, we've all heard, and we've all heard this verse, you know, living a life for Jesus, focusing on him and all that goes with that, loving everyone. But what are we actually carrying? What's that cross we're carrying? And that cross is, what that cross is that message of hope, that message of truth, of love, that Jesus died for us. So if we're carrying the cross as our backbone, then we've got that sure foundation of him. If we're carrying that cross as our backbone, that message of love, of truth, that God died for us, then when the world says you're worthless, when the world says that, nah, living for Jesus is too hard, it's too hard to love people, it's too hard to be kind, when the world sends you a message of hopelessness, we've got that cross, we're carrying that, we've got that backbone that says, nah, you are worth it. The cross says that, yeah, this life is going to be hard, but Jesus is with us. And the cross says there is hope. So we need to be carrying that cross so that we're carrying that message of love, of hope, of sacrifice with us into the world as we live for Jesus. The next thing we can learn is confidence. It's so easy to be like the passers-by who doubted, who, I'm not saying we're hurling insults, but they wanted Jesus to prove that he was who he said he was. And I mean, in this life we have doubts. It's completely normal to doubt. And I think doubt is actually can be a good thing, because if we use it, if we work with it instead of give into it, it can make our faith stronger. I really, really love to watch crime shows, and my favourite one at the moment is CSI Miami. And for those who watched it, Horatio Caine, isn't he great? Anyway, when they're the team, when they're trying to work out if someone's innocent or someone's guilty, maybe they already have an idea, but they've got to prove it. And they spend endless hours collecting DNA, evidence, photos, all sorts of things for them to be able to prove that this person is innocent or this person is guilty. But we're really lucky because we don't have to do that. We don't have to spend heaps of time trying to prove that God is who he says he is, because we've got the Bible. And either in a solid book form or at our fingertips in through our phone, through the internet, we've got his word. And if you want a bit more, then you've got, there's heaps of theologians, history people, scientific experts that have researched and written books that prove that the Bible is true. One of my favourites is The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. And if you're not a reader, there's also a movie version, which is pretty amazing too. But like anything, we need to learn more, we need to focus more on the subject so we can get more confident. So with anything, if the more we learn, the more we understand, the more confident we get. So I encourage you just to just get into the Bible, just read it, just soak in the truth of who God is and what he says in his word. Talk to him, listen to him, because he's wanting to talk to you. So I wonder, what do you need to work at to keep Jesus in a central role in your life, or the only central role in your life? Do you need to focus more on him? Do you need to work on carrying the cross, the message of the cross, as your backbone, your firm foundation? Or do you need to grow in confidence of who he says he is? Because for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish, but would have eternal life.
From noon until about 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over all the land. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with white vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now, leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." Many women were there watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons.